Stay tuned to this episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast, where I get to interview Julie and Yue, the hosts of the Dateable Podcast. These folks are delightful, they are filled with wisdom, and they've been in the trenches of dating, interviewed countless daters, countless experts, and put together a synthesis of wisdom and insight and practicality that are just absolutely fantastic. They just came out with their new book, How to Be Dateable, and I'm thrilled to have them on this episode sharing the best advice that they have to give to modern daters. So stay tuned.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page. I'm a psychotherapist. I'm the author of the best-selling book, Deeper Dating, the host of your podcast here. And today I am so excited because I have Julie Krafcik and Yue Xu, who are the hosts of the amazing, fabulous, wonderful Dateable Podcast, and the authors of the book, which just came out, How to Be Dateable. These folks are intrepid adventurers in the land of dating, and they're smart, and they're wise, and they're funny, and they're down to earth, and they are real, and they are treasure troves of wisdom when it comes to the world of dating and intimacy. So we're going to have a lot of fun. They are going to have so many fabulous things to share, and they have concepts that they've developed that I think are incredibly helpful, and they are absolute delights. So super excited about jumping in. And let me just say that in this and every episode, my commitment is to share with you the insights and tools that will most help you find, keep, and nourish healthy love and heal your life in the process, because the skills of dating are nothing more than the skills of intimacy, the greatest skills of all for a meaningful life. So if you want to learn more about this work, just go to deeperdatingpodcast.com. You'll find transcripts of this episode and every episode and lots of free resources if you join my mailing list. So with that, welcome Yue, welcome Julie. So glad to have you here.
Oh, our dear, dear friend Ken. I was silently screaming during that intro. Like a little girl, like, ah,
we're so excited to be here.
Oh, you folks too. We have done a number of episodes together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been on your show, you've been on my show, and I don't know, there's a quality of integrity that I think in the land of dating is breathtakingly absent, and you both are filled with it. So I have about a million questions I want to ask you, but first I want to introduce you more formally and tell about who you are and what you do. So Julie and Yue are active daters turned dating insiders and top influential voices of modern dating, relationships, and connection in the digital world. They are the authors of the newly out and I'm sure to be bestseller, How to Be Dateable, the Essential Guide to Finding Your Person and Falling in Love. And they're the co-hosts of the hit podcast Dateable, which has been named one of the top podcasts about modern dating and relationships by the New York Times, the Huffington Post, Oprah Daily, and more. And they're also the hosts and executive producers of the dating experiment show Exit Interview. Julie brings her background in human-centered design and research, while Yue shares her experience as a dating coach. And together, you can find them at dateablepodcast.com and at Dateable Podcast. So welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you here.
Yay. And we, that's the end, right? That's the episode. And ta-da. Well,
you got a lot to say about what you do, which is we're going to get to that. But I got a million questions for you. Okay. So I'm going to just jump in here with some of my questions. And when I'm looking down, I'm just looking at the questions that I have.
Go for it.
So I'm really interested in this one. What are some ways that dating culture today is setting people up to fail, despite having more options than ever before? Love to hear about that.
We have many thoughts about that. Dating culture currently is emphasizing dating itself, not dating for connection, not dating for relationships, not dating for love, but the pure act of dating. And the reason why we think that it's driving people apart is because we're also concerned about playing the game of dating that we forget why we're dating in the first place. Beautiful. So with everything that we do, all the behaviors and all the bad dating behaviors that keep getting coined, all these new terms, it's because we are so entrenched in the game of dating that we are not looking at the big picture, which is love, connection, human connection.
Thank you for that. So essentially true. Yeah. Really appreciate that.
I'll be right back after this. If you're interested in accelerating and deepening your search for love, I want to invite you to a very special project, the Deeper Dating Intensive. I only offer it twice a year, and it's a 6-month journey working closely with me and an amazing community to transform each member's search for love. And you can learn more at deeperdatingintensive.com. And if it feels like a match, on that page, you can set up a free one-on-one session with me to explore possibilities. I look forward to connecting if this speaks to you. Welcome back.
And we know you know this, Ken. Like, this was always a thing, even with deeper dating. I think what drew me to your book originally, I remember reading it back when I was in the trenches, in the thick of dating, and there was like a refreshness of like how real it was and how like it was to drop those dating tactics. And you know that the dating tactics and game have been around for a long time, but what's interesting in today's world, there's extra layers of what happens because of technology and abundance of choice and options that you alluded to. And there's just so many other dynamics that we see people spending a lot of time in places that aren't really fruitful. Like, we see a lot of time spent on analyzing text messages or, you know, dating profiles or what line should I send? And it's not like these aren't factors, but it's almost like a disproportionate of time and energy spent here, which of course burns people out because you're not even talking to another human being.
Yeah.
So true. You know, I asked my entire audience, what's the thing that is like the worst stuck point for you? And they came up with this term, dating fatigue.
Discouragement fatigue.
And I think that's really true. But I just have to just segue here for a moment, because Julie, you talked about being in the trenches of dating, and you're not in the trenches of dating anymore.
No, she's not.
She got out. I mean, it's funny because this is
You'll live there with everyone in your audience.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. I have enough experience to feel like I'm still very much relating. But yeah, it's funny because we're recording this like a couple of days after I got engaged. So we were telling Ken about this before we joined the recording. And, you know, it's been a journey, I'll say, because I remember when I was a student myself, and I always felt like a later bloomer, like I was a little behind in dating because I didn't really date a lot. Like when I was in college and it was more like in my late 20s, I was like, oh, maybe I should date and like have a relationship. And I found myself in a place that I was kind of clueless. And I remember getting all the books and a lot of them led me astray. Like a lot of them led me to bad inauthentic behaviors. And again, your book was one of the rare few in that like cohort of books that came out. And, you know, that I think is part of why UA and I started this too. Like, clearly at that point, I had more dating experience, but we were both very confused of what was happening in modern dating. And our goal at the time of starting Dateable was just to unpack it and understand it for ourselves, because it was a challenge for the two of us as well.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. And congratulations.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's the quality of the two of your connection is just such a joy to see. Like, Yue is the one who told me this news. And just seeing her joy at your engagement was just wonderful, too.
We're officially a throuple. This is why we're welcoming this new partner into our partnership.
I was going to say, Yue is still my number one life partner, no matter what happens. So.
Longest, for sure.
Wonderful. Okay, so you've kind of developed so much fabulous thinking around this that I really want to kind of mine that. And you've kind of developed a concept of the four traps of modern dating. Can you tell us about those traps and how to get out of them?
I think one of them that I fell hard for was this expectation of love on demand. Because in a very tech-forward society that we live in, we expect everything to be delivered in 2 seconds or 2 minutes or 2 hours or 2 days. And like anything longer than what we expect, we think that it's not worth it or it's not right for us. And we translate that into our personal lives, into our relationships. So when, let's say, you're creating a relationship with someone and things get hard, people tend to say, forget it. It's just taking longer than expected, or this person is not where I am in terms of timeline. I'm going to get out. And I would even say that Julie and I both were guilty of this in a lot of our earlier dating during this podcast, where we're like, you know what? It's a red flag, or we're getting out. Like, this is it. No, I don't want to put up with this. But now we realize, after 10 years of doing this podcast, love is created, love is built, and love takes time. And if we expect for love to just appear like an Amazon package, then we're setting us up for disappointment, because it doesn't work like that.
Mm.
I think with all of these, yeah, with all of these traps, it's, you know, our book is called How to Be Dateable, but we believe everyone is dateable. Like, we believe fundamentally everyone is dateable, but what's getting in people's way and not be feeling successful in dating and feeling burnt out and dating fatigued, as you brought up, that's the traps of modern dating. And it's kind of the byproduct of the dating culture. So one of them being expectation of love on demand that Yue mentioned, where, you know, when we expect things instantly to happen all the time, that's when people feel like, oh, I'm not going to keep going with someone because I didn't feel the spark, or I don't want to waste time because there's so many options, back to that we were talking about earlier. Like, there's that expectation plus the other traps we identified, and we feel like that's what's holding people back. And once you can recognize them, then that's what frees you from it, because then you can start to move in the dating world in a much more authentic place that's with your needs at the forefront, not just doing the thing that you think you should be doing because everyone else is doing it.
Beautiful, beautiful. So that's dating trap number one. That's really a big one. And I just want to say, like, one thought about that is that you kind of, we're talking about two different ways that we run too quickly. We expect things to be like just right, and then we leave. One is like that initial spark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not running when you don't feel that necessarily right away. And the other one that you mentioned, which I think is like really a piece of the wisdom that both of you bring, is that just like everyone knows, relationships take work, but early relationships take mm-hmm. work too. And dating takes work. So Yue, what you said about that piece of it, I think is so true. Like, there sometimes is hard work even at the beginning, and that doesn't mean that you should leave. So anyway, that was a really cool point. So let me let you continue with the other traps.
Yeah. I mean, another one that's near and dear that we see a lot of people falling for, including ourselves, is what we call the settling paradox, where we're so afraid to settle. The last thing we want to do is settle. We have a list of all the characteristics we need in a partner, many of which maybe aren't actually what we need, and they're not what matters. But then in return, because we're so focused on more of these superficial qualities or aspirational qualities, we forget about the stuff that matters, and we end up settling for unfulfilling relationships or situationships. And it's a paradox, because with all this knowledge of what we like, you know, all the people out there the possibility, like, why are we continuing to fall for these people that aren't giving us what we truly want?
Oh, you framed that so beautifully. That just captures it wonderfully. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. What's the next?
And then we've got the validation trap. This is in a world of social media where validation is so obvious and apparent and observable that we fall for this trap where we kind of relinquish our self-worth to other people. And what happens in this trap that we've seen is that people lose themselves in trying to get validation from others. So how this translates on dating apps is people just want to swipe and get the matches. And once they get the matches, there's a dopamine hit and they want to get more matches. And then we hear daters saying, I'm not getting enough matches, or I'm just not getting as many as my friend. It's that validation comparison. But then we ask, how many people are you trying to date here? Like, don't you just want one, like, ultimately? So it's a trap we all fall for because of the society and the media and the culture that we live in. But if we recognize it, then we know not to relinquish our self-worth and let our self-worth be dependent on someone else's opinion of us.
So clearly we know that there are worlds in what you just said, worlds of pain, of losing ourselves, of losing the main picture, of losing our self-worth. And swipe apps, you know, we know that clinically that they really encourage anxiety and depression. They fuel that for these very reasons. Yeah. So I just want to acknowledge the profundity of this trap, how much it hurts, how vulnerable it makes us. Any thoughts on how to get out of that one?
I just want a second before we go into how to get out, like, how much this trap shows up. Like, for me, I know this was a huge thing, and I can hear people saying, like, well, I don't necessarily need all the matches, but it's other ways too. It's like when you're more focused on, you know, I think our society just puts being in a relationship at a higher tier than being single. It's like, if you're a relationship, you've been saved, you figured it out. And if you're single, like, what's wrong with you? And there is absolutely nothing wrong with being single for the record, but that is like the societal trope that exists. And when dating becomes about more than just finding the right person, because like it's so public that we feel like we have to compare ourselves to our friends and why aren't we there yet? And the internal pressures that happen, like all of that also plays into the validation trap. So I think a first step of maybe getting out of it too is recognizing, like, what is it actually bringing up for you? Like, when you don't get that text back, there's probably a deeper prioritization wound or something that's happening for you. And I like to look at dating as a mirror, because I think that's a good way to reflect back on like what's happening for you, so you can do that work to like heal that piece and not necessarily look at dating as that form of validation.
Right. Yeah. Super helpful. And I think just the naming of this trap is really helpful, because it's just so easy to get into that compare and despair. I was just in one of my intensives, and a number of people were talking about like how, like, they're doing okay. They go on online dating, then they see other people's profiles who are like their competitors, they feel like, and it's just like, they just get sunk. There's so many ways to get kind of sunk in that process. So thank you for naming that. That's a really big one, a really important one. And there was one more too, right?
Yes. And this is all what's causing dating fatigue, by the way, because all these traps pull us away from our most authentic selves. So the fourth one we see to be very common for most daters, which is this concept called relationship chicken, where you have people wanting to get into relationships, but we do everything opposite in dating. We try to show as least interest as possible. We try to not be the first one to express our emotions, because then we, quote unquote, lose. So it's kind of odd that all we're trying to do is to connect with someone and create a relationship, yet we do everything to prevent the relationship from happening.
Oh my God, you folks are the best. That's great. That's so, I mean, it's not great. It's painful, but thank you for naming it. That's so much of the magic of what the two of you do, is you name things that would otherwise like be stealth. They'd be like stealth poison. And by naming it in the way that you do, like even giving it, you made up that name, relationship chicken, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's fabulous. Ah, so much in what you said. And your book helps people through all of these traps. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
I want to hear about that.
The thing to reiterate too is like, you're not doing anything wrong by doing these traps. Like, this is actually the norm, is to be doing these traps. Like, we've been told this is how you date. We hear people are just, you know, when you think about it, like, would you ever treat like other relationships in your life as like method, like as clinically almost as like dating? Like, you're not like counting the number of hangs that you have with a new friend, and you're not like defining, is this going to be my best friend, and like all this stuff. It's just very non-organic.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think, like, of course, like there's some method of dating, and we're not telling people in the book to stop dating by any means. It's more of just like, okay, now that we know this is how kind of dating is designed, and it's not working in the sense that we're not feeling good. We hear people, what we're calling a love crisis, because people are feeling like more discouraged by dating than ever before. Yeah. I'm not sure you've recognized this in your work. Like, it just feels like in the last year or so, it's even like compounded more than past years. And then just the burnout is happening. So our thought is like, how can you go in and, you know, have this magic of dating and connection if you're going into the whole thing in a burnt out place? So what can we do to actually get clear more on what is it we want, and find a way to date in a way that works for us, opposed to succumbing to these like rules and methods that aren't working?
Beautiful. Yeah. And so I'm going to ask you more about that in a minute, but I just want to say that there is this way that the two of you combine insight and reality with a very practical and real sense of hope. I think that like somehow with what you do, people walk out with a sense of hope and more clarity, which is why I think your book is so precious and why I want all of you to go out and get it, because it will really support you in your dating journey, in your intimacy journey.
So, Thank you, Ken.
I really mean it. I'm such a fan of both of yours. You are the real deal. And there's a lot of that not around. So, okay. I am interested in the different dating archetypes that you have defined. So tell us more about that.
Yes. This is such a fun tool for everybody, because in our 10 years of doing this podcast and doing our research, we found 5 categories of how people date and their attitudes towards dating, and also where their superpowers are in dating, like their core gifts, as you would say, Ken. Mm-hmm. And then where they could be missing some aspects, overlooking some places that are holding them back. And we came up with this dating archetype assessment because, first of all, we know dating culture is very fucked up, but we can't boil the ocean, right? So where we have to start is with the individual. The only way we can make a change is through you. You just take care of yourself and be accountable for yourself. So through this assessment, once you know what your archetype or archetypes are, because many people can fall into multiple categories, then you know where to lean into and then where to be more aware of. So for example, one of the archetypes is a maverick. That's who I am. I've been that all my life. My core gifts are I'm super independent. I stand strong in a relationship. I have a strong sense of identity. And I respect space from my partners, and I respect space for myself, and I have very high standards. I will lean into that. But what may be holding me back is that I run. I run at the first threat of my independence. I run at the first threat of my identity. And when things get tough, I think, oh, this is not right for me. So I'm going to take control of the situation and get ahead of it and preemptively run away or break up with this person. So what I'm doing, what I'm accountable for right now, is to be aware of the times I want to run. And then I ask myself, which direction am I running into? Am I running away from this person or running into this, towards this person? So that's where the slight change in my behavior has really helped me understand my archetype. So that's
this is a subjective eye. You're talking about really you in saying that, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful.
It's me through and through. But here's the reminder. I will never be less independent.
Right.
And I will never be someone who is different than this maverick type. I have to lean into the core gifts that have been given to me. And a true partner understands and appreciates those. But I also know when I'm self-sabotaging myself and my relationships.
Perfect. 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 Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So that's one. That's a great one.
So my leading ones were the dreamer achiever. So the dreamer is, you know, you wear your heart on your sleeve, you want nothing more than love, and you're so caring and put everyone first. And, you know, this type of person makes a fantastic partner because they are just loving all in all. The downside was that you sometimes get ahead of yourself. You live in a fantasy a little. Like I, for my personal self, there were so many times that I was in situationships or relationships that clearly weren't going anywhere, but I had this vision that just wasn't realistic. Mm-hmm. Or I had this great first date and I held on to that instead of all the subsequent times where it just wasn't meeting my needs in any way. And then the achiever was my other prominent one, which again, this person knows what they're looking for. They are not afraid to go after it in work and career and education. This served me really well, right? Like I was someone that was a go-getter. But in love, it was hard because I was always looking for that next milestone and counting like, am I on my third date? What's going to happen? Just very attached to the future. And that's hard to stay present. And I'll give you an example, like where the two kind of played together. And this was a real challenge for me. And I think like when I saw these were my two leading ones, I was like, okay, this all makes sense now. I think because I had this dreamer mentality that I saw the best in people, that I wanted things to keep going because of the achiever side, like I would stay in, you know, I had this situation that a friend of mine like confessed his feelings to me. And at first I was like, oh, I didn't really view him that way. I didn't think he was someone that was partner material. He didn't seem like someone that wanted something serious. Like my gut was saying, this isn't right. But because then the dreamer kicked in, I was like, oh, maybe this could be something, and kept going with it. And at that point I was like, okay, let me give it a try. And again, this isn't like bad to give things a try that maybe you wouldn't in the first place. But when it was time for me to give it a try, he was like, actually, I don't want a relationship anymore. And mind you, we slept together, so that could have been part of it as well. So it was like, as soon as that hit, it was like, oh, nope, I don't want a relationship. If I was the dater I am today, I would have stepped back at that point. I would have been like, okay, I gave it my all. Said he's not looking for a relationship. Got to take that at face value. I'm not going to try to do anything. But back when my achiever was really kicking in, I was like, okay, this is ammunition to double down. I'm going to change this person. I'm going to make them want to be with me. And I'm like sad to say that it was like 2 years that was kind of this like friends with benefits, like clearly was not meeting what I wanted. But again, the fantasizer, like the dreamer in me, saw it as like so much more than it was. Like I thought I was like in love with this person. So you can see how this can really prevent you from stepping away and meeting people that are at your level and that, you know, could be really great partners. And finally acknowledging that, it allowed me to date in a much more realistic way.
Yeah. Wonderful. And I can see these things as being such incredible seducers away from like the authentic intimacy.
Yes.
All of these can seduce us away so easily. And there's more, right? Are there more archetypes?
That's a very good word to use. We might have to steal that one, Ken.
Seducers.
your seducers in your archetype. Well, the seducer for the thinker, which is one of the other archetypes. Let's start with what the positives are. The thinker is someone who is deeply committed. This is a person that is intentional about their decisions, who has done their research. They are reliable, they're consistent, they're dependable. But where they may see what's holding them back, the seducers, would be this analysis paralysis. They're constantly doing all the research. They've got all the resources and they're wanting more information. But when you have, when you're inundated with so much information, the thinker may be seduced to not act at all and to not really take that next step or to initiate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can see that, right?
Yeah, that's really, really big. I can see all of these really clearly. And so those are the archetypes?
Yep. One more is the energizer, the last one. So there are five and they actually spell out mated, which we did not actually plan. That was a real coincidence. We're like, UA found that. She's like, wait. But the last one is the energizer. And this is the person that is very extroverted. They are the great date. Like, you always have fun with the energizer. They are go, go, go. They're either filling their social calendar or filling their dating queue, you know, they're just like lining up all the people. And in a relationship, this person is always trying new things and bringing new experiences and can be really great partner in that way, just full of life. Where this person, maybe what's holding them back is like all the go, go, go doesn't allow them to like reflect, like, what is it that I actually want? And also, if you're just kind of going out with so many people, you kind of stay at this surface level instead of going deeper. And people can feel like when they're a number in the lineup, or if you can't schedule a date for 3 weeks because you're so booked up, it's really hard to keep the momentum going in any new connection.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so all of these have, like you said, a superpower, like a gift.
Mm-hmm. They do.
And all of them have, and I think that this is true, our deepest immaturities constellate around our greatest gifts. And we have to know the gifts. And like you said, Yue, you have to lean into the gift first and foremost, but then see what the immaturities are that's around that. So this is a really useful tool for people to chart their intimacy journey, even after the relationship has begun, even after the even while the relationship is going on, because we'll keep doing those same things in our relationship.
100%. And we also actually tie it back to the traps that we mentioned earlier in the book, because everyone might fall for the traps in slightly different ways given their archetype. So these traps are kind of prominent with everyone, but the way they show up might be slightly different.
So this is a gift for everybody, is that you actually have a quiz that people can take to identify in more detail which of those archetypes are theirs. What are the traps? What are the superpowers? Later on, I'll be asking how people can find out more about you, but here we are right now. So how do people get the quiz?
They can actually just go to howtobedatable.com. That's our book site too, since the quiz is in the book, but the quiz is there. Even if you don't get the book, we hope it compels you to take that next step. But even if it doesn't, I think there's a lot that's there that could be helpful just right away.
Beautiful. Great.
Hey, Ken, did any of those resonate with you, as in who Ken is today?
Okay. So who Ken is today in a marriage relationship that's gone on for 16 years. But I will also think about who I was in early dating. And I guess I would say, like, this swirl of gifts and neuroses that kind of like characterize my way of being, I would have to say that the thinker is a really, really big one
that.
For me.
Yes.
Yeah. So I will be like, you know, Greg and I do this tantric hug every night and mostly every morning where we just hold each other. And in my head, to stop my thinking is the hardest thing in the world. And he's like, Ken, come back. Yeah. So like I definitely like think about the nuances and the meaning. And that's also connected to it, like a deep sensitivity, a deep like awareness of my nervous system, which then like, which is a gift, which links in with my thinker self. So I would have to say thinker, but I would also have to say dreamer. And then that dreamer one is like an achiever in the realm of like Let's have more intimacy in our family. Let's have more intimacy with our kids. Let's have more intimacy with each other. And that like joins in with my thinker, which never gives me a fucking break. So that's my thought about how these apply to me. But it's really helpful to hold each one of those and think of them as both a gift and an avoidance of intimacy. Yeah.
Do you feel like that was in your dating life? Like, I know you shared some of your stories on our podcast about just like the wave that would come over and some of that. Like, do you see like that correlation, or do you feel like you were had a different archetype maybe when you were dating?
Well, I think of that as like, I have to think about my answer to that, but I would say that essentially it's the same ones. I would say essentially it is the same ones. But I just think that this, I guess the dreamer played a bigger role then. And that was like my longing for intimacy, but also then my shame around intimacy. So it was like, it was a really interesting one because it was the dreamer, but then it was my shame around being the dreamer that made me kind of not show my dreamer self. Which was like another kind of immaturity that swirled around that. So, I love that each of you shared both your archetypes and kind of your traps as well. That was really helpful. When you wrote the book, when you put the book together after, you know, a decade of listening to experts and people in the trenches and living your own life, what did the book, like what for you was kind of some of the most important kind of distillations that you got from that? Because you had to do so much thinking about everything you had heard. What are the distillations that you feel are like the most valuable for readers and listeners?
I mean, the one that stands out to me is like, this sounds weird coming from dating experts, but I feel like you don't need to be good at dating. And I think that's like the basis of the book. Because I think at least the way dating is today, the way it's structured today, it's all centered around disconnection instead of connection, what we all so deeply crave. And like we were talking about earlier, when you're playing relationship chicken or you're focused on this list that someone needs to measure up to and you're so afraid to settle and all of that, that is all around like a protection mechanism. And it's game playing, it's inauthenticity. Like even, you know, I just always go back to this example. Like we had a friend of ours on our podcast and she was talking about how like dating culture just makes her feel like she wants to give less because everyone else is giving less. So she calls it that she's succumbing to the lowest common denominator. And like every other part of life, she is on it. She's making plans. She's proactive. She's setting up all this stuff. But in dating, because everyone else is giving such limited effort, she's now ghosting because other people are ghosting. She's giving 10%, she's giving 9% because someone's giving 8% or 10%. Someone's giving 10%, she's giving 9%. And our whole take was like that, just to keep going like down into a like being pulling away from your authentic self and who you are to play the dating game. No one is winning in that situation. So why not just give 0% to that person and stay true to your needs and focus on the people and let them rise up instead of feeling like you need to like learn the dating game. I think that's like the biggest thing that stood out to us is that everyone's trying to like fit into the mold of dating instead of taking that step back and being like, What do I want? And how do I actually stay true to myself?
Beautiful, beautiful. And I want to come back to that point. Yue might also have some things that she wants to say, but then I want to come back to that point of like, how do you do that in your profile? Because that seduction of like, how do I do what I'm supposed to do versus like, how am I going to really be me? So I want to come back to profile writing, but I just wanted to know, Yue, for you too, like, a key distillation for you.
It's actually kind of related to your profile question. So here's to give you a little context. It took us about 2.5 years for this book to be born, the longest labor ever. And during this 2.5 years, as you know, a lot of things can happen. So when we first started writing the book, I was in a long-term relationship living with my partner. Julie had just started her relationship to her now fiance. Ooh, fiance. But in the middle of writing the book, I had gotten out of the relationship at almost 5 years due to infidelity, and Julie moved in with her partner. So what was so beautiful about this time was that we were able to look at this book from multiple perspectives at Amazing. Different stages in your dating career. Okay. And we found this holds true. A lot of people think, oh, my situation's different, but I'm going to try to do dating differently. Well, you can't do dating differently if you're still just swimming in modern dating. You're still in the same game. What's going to change your behaviors and your actions is to think differently. And I think what is so beautiful about this book is that we talk about this idea of rising above modern dating. Let's stop drowning in this culture that's pulling us down and literally succumbing to the lowest common denominator, where we're one downing each other. Rise above. Stop saying, oh, I'm going to do... You know, like, yes, you can rewrite your profile 10, 15 times. You can re-download the apps to refresh the kind of inventory you get. You can close down your apps and only date people out there in the wild. Yes, you can do all these different things. But guess what? You're still swimming in the same pool. But if you rise above and say, actually, I'm just not going to settle for anybody who is not aligned with my values, who is not aligned with what we call a dating North Star, which is why you're dating in the first place, or anybody who is not validating me in the right way, but anybody who is not prioritizing me, anybody who's not consistently communicating with me, I'm going to rise above. I don't need to engage or succumb to that pool of daters. So I think that's such a takeaway. Is like, yes, we can talk about dating profiles all we want, but if you're still in the same mindset, not much is going to change.
I love that. I was going to clap, but it would have created a horrible noise in my microphone. if I didn't throw it myself. That's great. Dating North Star. How can people find and identify and articulate? Because you need your North Star, right? You need to be oriented to your North Star. If you're not loyal to your North Star, you will be loyal to self-sabotage. So how do you find your North Star?
We do have a whole exercise in the book. So you can do all this. But I mean, that the whole like thing too is like the second part of our book is like, okay, we've identified all these traps. We've identified what's holding people back and where there's opportunity. Now, what are we going to do about it? Because that's the whole point, right? And like you said earlier, we believe actually that this is very hopeful. And we, like, when people ask us our take on dating, they're always expecting us to be like, oh, it's so terrible out there. And both of us have actually felt very positive about dating through our 10 years of doing this podcast, which is a testament.
You do.
But that's the testament to the change of the way you're thinking about it. So the dating North Star, I definitely attribute this to a huge part of what helped. It freed me, I think. It freed me to be like, I'm going to invest in the right people and recognize a lot quicker when someone's not measuring up. Because looking
this
back,
everything.
Yeah, like one of the biggest things, and again, everyone has what's holding them back. For me personally, as the dreamer and achiever, it was staying with the wrong people. That was 100% hands down why I didn't meet someone earlier. Again, happy the way it all played out. Everything is a way of working the right way. But I think the dating North Star, it's twofold. And again, there's a whole exercise, but it's what's your reason for dating right now? Like, why are you dating? When we ask people, usually we get a generic answer, like to be in a relationship, to have companionship. And not to say that those aren't valid, they totally are, but we're asking you to go deeper. 5 layers deeper. Those are just like scratching the surface. And we actually in the exercise encourage people to not even use the word partner or relationship. And what is it that you actually want? Like if dating was off the table, what would you be missing out on? So it's one, getting really clear there. And then the second part of the North Star is identifying your top three core needs. I think so many of us, including myself for a long time, had no idea what our needs are, like in the first place. And a good way to actually figure out your needs real fast is to look at what bothers you the most about modern dating. For me, it was when I didn't know if I'd see someone again or get a call back or text back. So it was like the inconsistency. And when I was dating before I met my partner, that became a huge need of mine. And if someone wasn't able to do that, they dropped off. Like, I didn't care about their credential anymore. I didn't care about the crazy chemistry we had. If they couldn't meet like the bare minimum of being in a relationship with me, then I needed to move forward. I needed to stay true to myself and invest somewhere else.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. I love this concept. Did you both come up with that? Your dating North Star?
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
It's huge.
It is gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. And everyone, I just invite all of you to think about that. And I think you told me that there's a part of the book that includes something from our interview. Is that right? Yes,
yeah. Of course you made your way in, Ken.
Of course.
I love that. I love that.
I mean, we actually talk about the core gifts. That's the part that we love so much. And I think it goes back to the theme, like, we're not telling anyone to change who they are because you're all amazing. Like, everyone is amazing the way they are. We don't need to. I think self-help gets a bad rep, like normally, of like, you need to do all this stuff to fix you. And I think you and I, we're all on the same page. Like us and you and Ken with your book, it's like, we're not telling you to change who you are fundamentally. It's like, how do you just get out of your own way and unlearn the things that aren't actually helping in any way?
Yeah.
And what we talk about in actually our last, we have a framework that's the way out, but the last part is perseverance, because it does take time to find your person. Of course, we wish everyone the second they read the book, they meet their person right away, but that's not always realistic. There is an element of time and just the right person showing up for you and being open to the right person. But we talk about, like, in that chapter, the core gifts and how, you know, there is this need to fall in love with what you bring to the table and recognize that.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that's in there. Yeah, our work, I think, is so in sync. So I'm just going to ask a last question before we talk about how people can dive into your world, learn more, really, really get to take advantage of all that you have to offer, which is abundant. So that last question is kind of, what's something you want to say to my audience, to our audience? Like, what's the one thing that you most want to impart at this moment?
For me, it would be that through this book writing process, this message resonated with me more and more. And that message is, instead of exerting the energy out, I want to focus on bringing that energy in, preserving energy in. And that means checking in with myself to see, is this something aligned with what I want, aligned with my values, aligned with my needs? And is this something I want to spend energy on? And a lot of times in dating, we care about what other people think. We care about which apps they should be on. We care about what are the events they should be at. It's exerting that energy out. And end of the day, this is why we experience dating fatigue, because we reserve no energy for ourselves. So I would say the main message that I'm taking away today for me is to prioritize my energy first, date myself first, before I allow myself to share that energy with others.
That is so counterintuitive, wise, probably so much not what people expected you to say, but such a gift that it's actually that inner game that defines the outer journey. And I love that. And I love the bravery, because that's looking in instead of looking out. And God knows it's seductive to look out. So thanks for the power of that message. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to add on to what Yue said, I think the way you said that, it just comes from a place of, like, I know my worth, I know my value, and I'm in control in the sense that like I'm leading with what's important to me. I'm not letting others dictate my happiness or pull me down. And I think today with dating, we put so much emphasis on the other that a lot of this is counterintuitive. And really when we wrote this, it was like peeling back the layers on a lot of this to be like, actually, what is important? Is this the way? Like, it doesn't need to be this way. So I think first and foremost, like the counterintuitive, I think is maybe the word I would use to describe all of it. But the last message I think to leave your audience is trust in your timing. This one keeps resonating with me that while, you know, it's easy to be like, well, I wish I was further along or I didn't do all this. Like I could look back at that situationship I mentioned, like, why did I do that for 2 years? All of that though helped get me to where I am today. And we see this with daters that the journey and understanding the growth that happens from dating is helping you get to a larger place. And it's hard to see in the moment. I think once you get there, you're like, everything made sense. Like I needed to do all this to get to where I am and to develop. So I guess the parting words are, is if you're not where you want to be today, it's okay. You did nothing wrong. How can you learn from it so you don't keep repeating the same things over and over again and move forward? For me, it was like, if someone tells me they don't want to be in a relationship, I'm not going to try to make them do that. Like I'm moving forward. I've learned that and I will never stand for that again. Instead of shaming yourself of like, why did I stay for 2 years? Like we all have done things, but it's how do we move forward and trust in the larger vision?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so fantastic. You know, I just think that the two of you are like the wise friend that everybody would want to be able to talk about this with, like really, really, really. And your book distills that, your podcast distills that, but I don't think anybody does what the two of you do in the way that you do. And I love that. So I'm
Ken. That's why we love you.
Yeah, I do it in another way too. And that is why we love each other. And at different points in your journey, when we have had interviews together, I've gotten to hear about your story, you've gotten to hear about mine. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful that we do that. And I got lots more questions, particularly in the realm of sex and dating, that we won't have time for today, but I'd love to have you on again and get to ask those questions at a later point. But meanwhile,
me too. Yes.
Thank you.
We are deeper dating and dateable are BFF. So
deeper dateable. Remember that was our, that's who we are. Yeah.
That's the crossover. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So, okay. How can everybody get to learn more about everything dateable?
Yeah. Well, howtobedateable.com. You can find out anything about the book. You can do the quiz that we mentioned. Also, of course, you can find the book at Amazon, local booksellers, anywhere out there. And then datablepodcast.com for everything else. And we are everywhere. We're podcasts are. We're on every platform and at Datable Podcast on Instagram and other social media.
And naturally, as podcasters, we do have an audiobook version of the book as well. And we highly recommend getting the companion, the hardcover, and the audiobook because there are a lot of exercises in there you may want to write in your book. And then some areas you may just learn by walking or driving. Yeah. So definitely get the companion book and audiobook.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, because really, really like something happens when you walk and you listen.
Yes.
And something happens when you read and get to write. So yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you both are just the best. I am so happy to have you here. Thanks for your wisdom and your fun, and I will have you on here again soon. And everyone buy the book because it's really, really, really worth getting. And listen to their podcast because they are just spectacular. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Ken.
Looking forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast. And Yue and Julie, thank you so much for being here.
We appreciate
you,
having
Ken. Us.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.